You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumours.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes.
What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes?
Yeah, minutes. It's not minutes. Next year, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. The past week has seen the launch of the Australian government's attempt to save us from the intrusive, often invasive telemarketer. But the rules associated with the new act seem to be full of exemptions. The whole idea of preventing unwanted phone calls as you sit down to your dinner is just that. Don't call me. Maybe the initiative name is ambiguous. Maybe it should be, do not call me unless you can think of a way around the rules register. Excuse my cynicism, but I would have thought that a do not call register means just that. Apparently, if you're involved in a political party, a religious group, a social research group, or any non-commercial organisation, the rules on the whole don't apply. So why bother? Well, it's an election year after all, and it is a step in the right direction, but it just doesn't go far enough when protecting the privacy of residents. So we're back to square one, and the waters have now become very muddy. My advice: simply don't answer the phone if it's a private call around dinner time. You could install the phone company's free answering service and let the caller talk to the hand, or better still, why not let your 2 or 3 year old embellish their communication skills by letting them answer the telephone?
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
What's Web 2 all about then? Adam Turner heads to CeBIT, Australia's leading technology expo. Telstra about to launch a new ad campaign attacking the government's broadband policy. Microsoft loses its MP3 battle with Alcatel-Lucent. Copyright laws in the online world just don't gel. And 12 megabits per second broadband just won't cut it in the future. All that and more on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the tech world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Digg founder Kevin Rose embroiled in HD DVD code fiasco, international users say goodbye to Pandora, Tuesday this week a big day for Microsoft, confusion over Telstra's latest fibre-to-the-node proposal, and is the end in sight for Australian telemarketers? Welcome to Tech Talk News. In what might be one of the most significant acts of defiance against digital rights management, founder of the popular online community Digg, Kevin Rose, has allowed the publication of code on his website which enables users to circumvent copy protection on high-definition DVDs. Attempts to stop Rose from publishing details of the DVD crack have led to a worldwide user revolt. The furor started when a cease and desist letter was sent to the Digg website administrators by AACS, the licensing administrator that oversees the digital rights management technology on high-definition DVDs. The order requested the removal of an anti-DRM key from Digg. Administrators initially complied with the order. Chief Executive Officer Jay Adelson told readers, "Whether you agree or disagree with the policies of the intellectual property holders and consortiums, in order for Digg to survive, it must abide by the law." He went on to say that, "We all need to work together to prevent Digg from exposure to lawsuits that could very quickly shut us down. Thanks for your understanding." But users didn't understand. As fast as articles were removed by the administrators last week, they were resubmitted in their thousands in an act described by one user as a 21st century revolt. The founder of Digg, popular internet personality Kevin Rose, then decided not to censor the information, telling users, "If we lose, then what the hell, at least we died trying." Digg's combination of social bookmarking and blogging have made it one of the most popular sites on the internet, and it now accounts for 1% of total internet traffic in the United States. Pandora, the popular radio service streaming free music to the internet, last week blocked access to users from outside the United States. Regular users of Pandora received an email last week from administrators saying that due to licensing constraints, Pandora could no longer allow access for most non-US-based listeners. Pandora is an automated music recommendation and internet radio service created by the Music Genome Project. Pandora administrators said that the decision was taken because of recent RIAA rulings that increase fees and ask for licensing guarantees. Microsoft is set to release 7 security updates this week on the infamous Patch Tuesday, with at least one from each category rated critical. For users of the world's most popular PC operating system, Microsoft has warned it will provide 2 patches for Windows itself, 3 for Office, 1 for Exchange, and 1 for an interface to Crypto API and BizTalk. In addition, there will be the usual update for the malicious software removal tool, and 7 non-security, high-priority updates will also be released. IT Wire reports that in accordance with normal practice, Microsoft has given no indication of the nature of the vulnerabilities being addressed. As speculation heightens that the government is about to do a deal with Telstra on a fibre-to-the-node network rollout, competitors are concerned that the proposed technology will prohibit access to subscribers' local loops. Telstra has admitted that the price for wholesale access to its fibre-to-the-node network would be about $85 per month, and plans to use VDSL technology from fibre nodes into homes. VDSL, or Very High Bitrate Digital Subscriber Line, is the next generation of DSL technology, providing 52 megabits per second downstream and 12 megabits per second upstream. VDSL would render any other DSL services unusable because of interference. This means many millions of dollars of ADSL 1 and 2 Plus investments already made by Telstra's competitors would be wasted and would leave consumers with no other option but to buy services on Telstra's new VDSL network. The news comes after the G9 group of telcos submitted a draft special access undertaking to the ACCC in April, detailing its plan for a fibre-to-the-node network to rival Telstra's. Telstra has denied the numerous reports that it's close to striking a fibre-to-the-node deal with the government. And in a much-anticipated move by Australian consumers, the government's Do Not Call register was launched last week. The register, aimed at reducing the number of unsolicited marketing calls to Australians, was officially launched by the Minister for Communications, IT and the Arts, Senator Helen Coonan. Unfortunately, though, the register will not guarantee a complete end to telemarketing calls, as charities and market research companies are not affected by the new legislation. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Andrew, in a completely underwhelming move by the Department of Human Services in Victoria.
This is the political rhetoric which is coming out. Not about how we're going to solve the problem. It's time to get the slanging match out because we've got an election coming up.
Don't they carry a big red box with a telephone in it?
Juiced won't even work on ADSL 1.
Well, now, none of us are serious gamers, but Dr. Ron's got some ideas.
Have you?
I do. What's your... What's the transmission of radio waves, as Andrew said, is called propagation.
That's one.
The difference is, at its simplest, lots and lots more addresses.
It's like the pain that Australians went through a few years ago. We ran out of telephone numbers here.
That's right.
Telstra fired up a $1.5 billion network called Next IP. Would you want to watch on Foxtel anyway?
Well, there's not much there to watch.
It's like play school, really, isn't it?
There'll be a whole generation of people listening to this show saying, what's a library?
Oh, that's that.
We've got this thing called, you get a first life. Yeah. There's some good pictures on there of kids doing things like that.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio for May, our first May show for 2007. Dr. Ron joins us. Mark Diggins joins us. Good evening, gentlemen. How are you both this evening?
Good, good. How are you?
Good evening, Andrew. I'm well, thank you.
That's good. The rundown keeps changing. We believe or not, have semi-organisation in here with a rundown. And we curse when things go ballistic today in the IT world, which it actually has. So bear with us this evening. But there's so much happening out there, so much gossip, so much going on. We've had Senator Coonan out there announcing the Do Not Call register, which we'll talk about very shortly. You heard in the introduction. There's a lot of rumours. You know, you think Qantas is... You know, stifled the Australian Stock Exchange with halting shares today. or yesterday, or whenever it is that you might be listening, this week, I should say. How about this for a rumor? Shares in Yahoo soared as much as 19% to their highest level in nearly a year after two newspapers reported that the company and Microsoft were in preliminary merger talks to take on common foe Google.
Ooh,
how's that for a rumor?
Yeah, that's
a big rumor. Yahoo and Microsoft joining up to take on the big G.
So do Microsoft see Google as actually bigger than what they are, sort of thing? Or is just Microsoft not into that sort of, you know, they sell hardware and software to go with it rather than web stuff?
Good question. I don't know, but as Dr. Ron pointed out last week in the show, Microsoft lost its crown for being the most sought-after website. It's now Google. Google took the crown off the boys over there in Microsoft land. So that's going to be very interesting. The stock pulled back after a contradictory reports that the two companies may work on a joint venture or another form. So it's all scuttlebutt, gossip and the likes.
I'm excited, Andrew.
Why?
Today's a palindrome, the date.
Is it? A palindrome?
70507 it is today.
Yeah?
Same forwards as it is backwards.
That's exactly right, Mark, but not if you're listening in the US where it'd be completely wrong.
Or in Brisbane, Cairns?
No, Brisbane is our
Cairns
date
Wednesday. What day is it today? Wednesday. Yeah, good.
It depends on when you're listening to us. That's why we're recording this program on the 7th of May.
Yes.
So in Australia, it's exciting, but elsewhere, it possibly isn't.
Mm. Mm. Had some good emails this week.
We've got some great feedback.
Do you want to go first or shall I?
I'll go first if you like.
Yeah.
Hello to Bill S., who's a new forum user. Thanks
Hello,
for
Bill S.
posting their bill. And also got an email from Mark, the mobile TV watcher. Mark says, hi, guys.
Oh, I saw that. Is that from user at 3 or something?
Yeah, a very
cryptic... I was trying to work out whose email address that was. I saw that one, yeah.
A very cryptic email address. Have to mention that I like to watch mobile TV sometimes on the long commute home in the afternoon. BBC World at its best. A fellow lecturer worked out that there are enough IPv6 addresses. Now, we're talking about the new IP system that's going to be introduced
last
week. Yes, we were
IPv6, yes.
A fellow lecturer worked out there are enough IPv6 addresses for every square centimetre of the earth. That is 10 to the power of 30. So we should not run out any time soon. Cheers, Mark, the mobile TV watcher. P.S. I sent this from the mobile. That's nice.
I'm glad that there's a lot of lecturers and university people out there with too much spare time on their hands.
That's the sort of thing they do, isn't it?
One of the other emails, which I should have read out a while back, we got it last week. No, last week? 19th of April, last month. Love the podcast. This is from Axel Bendix. Hello, Axel, from the Fosters Group, would you believe?
Oh, hi, Axel.
See, people listen to us in all sorts of good places. Axel said, love the show, etc. A question for you, though. In the middle of the podcast, you have a break about how to subscribe to the podcast featuring a child's voice. Apparently, it's been driving him and others absolutely crazy. Dr. Ron?
This is the one of the most...
Hot topic on the forum?
It is a hot topic, mate. It's the most asked question that we have to our feedback
now, is that
email.
Sad? Look, we're talking about technology, but no, they want to know what
people
the little
girl
says.
People don't say, what laptop should I buy? They don't say, I've got a problem with my Windows installation. They don't say, my battery blew up, what can I do? They say, what does that little girl say on the edge? Yeah. Say something about something about Charlie pressing.
Well, that's exactly it. She said, podcasting is Charlie pressing. It's my little girl, and she wanted to do something, and didn't quite come out right, and so that was the result. And as a result of that, we've had, as you say, just read the forum and you'll find
inundated
out.
Inundated with questions about that one.
Exactly. How's the Frapper stuff going? You got any Frapper reports?
We've got a couple of new people on Frapper.
Yeah, new pins anyway?
So hello to the new pins there. I haven't written down their names, but we have got a few.
Excellent. Excellent. If you'd like to communicate with us in any way, shape or form, while we're live to air tonight in Melbourne, or if you want to pick us up and have a chat to us when you're listening to us on the pod, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au is the best place, or you can visit the forum, forum.techtalkradio.com.au. We also have a couple of new podcasts which are available from our website too. That is the news service that you heard Dr. Ron just talking about before. You may be bandwidth impaired, living somewhere in rural Australia, like Kilsyth.
You might be... Or Kilsyth.
That's a Melbourne gag. Sorry, it's just on the outer fringe of the city.
You might be time impaired. You mightn't have time to listen to the long podcast. You
exactly.
might just want a quick 3-minute update of technology.
Exactly. If you just want to hear the news and get it over and done with, it's available on the website. Also, Adam Turner. Adam has joined the show recently. He came in and did a live stint the other day, and he's also regular. A little piece that he sends across tonight. We're going to talk about CBIT, but his contribution to the show is also available via podcast at the same place. And also visit iTunes, and if you want the one-click easy, push this button and away you go, just do a search for them on iTunes, and they'll come up beautifully.
And we have a feedback number. For if you're in Australia, 1-300-664-882, and Dr. Ron, international?
It is +613 9012 5362.
Oh, look at that. Put him on the spot. Reacted just like
it's
that.
It's burned into my brain, that number.
It's good. I'm no good with numbers. You guys are sensational. Now, speaking of telephone numbers, thanks for the segue. Absolutely sensational. The Do Not Call register got launched by the honourable member for... where is she? Canberra? Oh, no, I can't even remember now.
The Communications
Senator,
Minister.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think where she's a member of. I think it's one of the Canberra suburbs or something like that. No, anyway.
Not sure.
Anyway, she. It's important, isn't it? She launched the Do Not Call register, which is an Australian government initiative coming up to the election, where you can log in and basically register your mobile, your home phone number, or your business, although it doesn't actually specify whether it's a home or a business number. So register your business number if you don't want telemarketing calls from these sort of guys as well. Pretty painless sort of process, but I think it's somewhat flawed in respect to the fact that a lot of people have got exemptions. Dr. Ron, have you had a bit of a look into this?
I have. I registered myself.
Did you see them launch it on the Sunrise program?
No.
Oh, Mr. Kosh, David Kosh, when they started talking about the fact that we politicians are exempt from the Do Not Call register, his face just... he just started laughing, put it that way. So we should go into that, I guess.
What do you mean they're exempt, Mark? It means that they don't have to. They're
it's for
already...
for telemarketers, people trying to sell you something. So for charities, they're allowed to still call you.
Yep.
Otherwise, there's still restrictions on when they can call you, but they are still allowed to call you. And politicians are allowed to call you.
Oh.
So it's coming up to an election. So wasn't there recorded messages being sent, you know, ringing your phone with a recorded message about...
Do you mean like this?
Hello, this is John Howard. I've taken the unusual step of contacting you with this recorded message.
That was last election one, wasn't it?
Yeah, do you want to... You'll probably get it again. I'm not going to play it now, but you'll probably get another one of those political... Lydia was saying too, from Palo Alto in the US, she's our US correspondent who chooses not to answer the phone when I ring. She was saying that Hillary Clinton's big on those sort of things too. They get plenty of them around, what do they call it? What's that time over there where they do their fundraising? We call it pre-selection here, but there's no money involved. They go out and I can't
think. They go fundraising, don't they?
I can't think of what they do. But anyway, there's a lot of that happens in the US.
I would have thought that would be an option. When you actually register, you can tick the box to say, no, I don't want politicians either.
Good idea. Wonder why they didn't think of that. If you and I and Ron sitting here can think of things like that.
I'm sure they thought of it. They just decided not to do it.
Wouldn't you want to have a box where you can tick which says... no junk mail at all. You know, like how you put on a sticker on your letterbox?
Yep.
Nothing. I don't want anything. Or if you tick the box which allows you to have certain flavours of advertising, if you're really that way inclined. And there are some people who do that.
I can understand like getting why. Charities might not get any money if that was one of their main sources. So I can understand why they might let some through. But, you know, politicians, there's nothing to be gained for the consumer or for the other end, if that makes sense. So, you know, give us the choice at least to... block you out.
This is what Helen Coonan had to say last week.
From today, Australians can register their personal home and mobile numbers. That will then make it illegal for telemarketers, that is people who are trying to flog stuff, to call these numbers after the 31st of May. What we tried to do was to get the balance right. That is why we thought that it is important that there be some exemptions. But I do repeat that because of the new standard, even those exempt categories will be limited in the hours they can call.
Hours that they can call. Up until 8 o'clock, I think, on a night. But nonetheless, you can still be sitting there having your breakfast, having your lunch, having your dinner.
Dinner times when they normally call. I don't think it's going to make any changes. You know, up to 8 o'clock at night, they always call it dinner time.
You've got young kids, Mark.
Absolutely.
Why don't you let them answer the phone?
We do most of the time now. They're getting old enough, you know, that we let them answer it anyway. And so, yeah, but we still end up having to take it off and to find out who it actually is. So.
Oh, well. Normally, if it's a telemarketer. And then the other telltale sign is if you have the calling number display, which is a brand from one of the telcos.
And it says out of area.
And it says out of area. Yeah. Or private.
Private.
Just go easy on it. So.
I noticed with interest that even though overseas telemarketers could still call into Australia and still harass you and be exempt from the law, there is a provision there that if the overseas call centre is operating on behalf of an Australian company, for example, Optus may have outsourced part of their call centre function to an overseas organisation, they are prohibited from calling you if you're listed on the register.
Mm. So it's a good idea all around. I just think they could have
implemented it a bit better.
Yeah, and I did read today that it was rushed in. Did you
Oh, everything's rushed in this time of the year because of the election.
No, you know how you couldn't get onto the site? Did you try? Did you have any trouble?
I tried. I got on first go.
I had success, yeah.
Yeah, no, I didn't get on. I tried.
An error that timed... What sort of error did you get?
Yeah, no, I can't remember. Oh, I wish I'd remember. No, it didn't go anywhere. It's like timed out type of thing.
Oh, so, you know. Okay.
And there was a heading at the top saying, please bear with us. You know, it's an extremely
But doesn't
busy.
That in itself give you an indication about how people in Australia hate telemarketers if we've all flocked to our only potential saviour and you can't get on?
Yeah, well, I read today that they were saying that the reason it was rushed in and it was meant to be able to handle 700,000 people an hour or something, and because it was rushed to get on it, you know, bring it up for the launch date, that actually they were looking into why it couldn't handle that.
It was unable to cope with the demand.
But there was a thing called load sharing, you know. They could have thought a bit about it, I would have thought.
It was meant to actually handle and it didn't do it because it was rushed in, they believe. But anyway, I got on eventually and it was all good. So.
You get an email back. And you have to click the link to confirm and validate your...
Which is a good idea.
Yeah, so put a rigid email in there. Now, also, there were a lot of questions during the week about how it relates to silent numbers. Now, the Do Not Call register is just that. If you put your number in there, whether it's silent or not, they shouldn't call it regardless. So I would not go thinking that you're going to have your number exposed or anything like that, because all a silent number does... is means that directories won't tell anyone if someone rings up.
That's correct.
To look for
and
it. That's all
silent
the silent number means.
Is an old name for it, isn't it? It's a we won't publish this. I think Telstra say they don't actually even call it a silent number anymore. They have another name for it, and I can't remember off the top of my head what it is.
Yeah, but we basically all call them silent numbers.
Yeah, but basically it just means we won't publish it. It's not as though it's not available and people can't try it or anything. It's just we won't publish it.
One last thing. It's amazing. This is completely off topic. Well, it's not. It's about silent numbers. Have you ever paid for something you don't get?
Yeah.
This is a silent number. You have to pay to have your number not published. I think that's sensational, right. Isn't it? What a great revenue-raising stream that is.
The other thing that I'm wrapped about is that both of my landlines at home, which I have for personal use and for business use, are both silent, and I get telemarketing calls to both of them.
Mm.
So figure.
I'm sure they just randomly pick a number.
Well, this is it.
Pandora.
Oh, bye-bye,
we
Pandora.
We said bye-bye to Pandora. Now, we did a great review on the show the other day and sort of really sung its values.
You spoke to Tim Westergren.
That's right.
In February.
This week, they've had to turn it off to outside the United States due to legal reasons. That was the initial... what they said to their performers or all the record companies when they signed up is that it'll only be available in the US. And as we know from here in Australia, we could hear it. But unfortunately, they had to get heavy due to, obviously, I think someone sending a letter and they turned it off. And so now it's not available.
Well, next time we won't mention that on Tech Talk Radio that's only available to the US.
A good point,
the,
Mark.
I think that was me who spilt the beans at the time.
We need to keep it to ourselves.
Kept it to ourselves and our listeners.
Can I tell you the number of proxy sites that have popped up to get past this dilemma around the world at the moment? There's plenty. So.
I tried a few just from a technical interest point of view, but I didn't have any success.
I haven't tried yet. When do you get time to do those sort of things?
I don't.
Doctor?
That's a problem. I would have persevered a bit longer if I'd had the time.
Exactly. Yeah. But if anyone has any success out there, we would like to hear from you. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au would be terrific.
They said in an email that they're deeply, deeply sorry to say that due to licensing constraints that they can no longer allow access to Pandora for most listeners located outside of the United States. So they're filtering on IP address, so looking at the internet address of your computer, and they're making a decision as to whether or not they'll let you access the service.
And then if you can find a proxy to go through, then your IP address changes to the proxy's IP address, and if there's one in the US, let us know, because that's probably the best way to do it. Hard drives have grown in size again. Today, IDG told us that the humble hard drive is going to 1 terabyte.
So the little 8 gig one that I told you about last week that I've got in my Linux server, it's saying I can do better than that now.
Have a listen to this.
Hitachi Distributed Legend Performance Technologies is taking orders for the world's first 1 terabyte 3.5-inch hard drive, the 7K1000. Legend says the hard drive will be available in June with a retail price of $599, or about 60 cents a gigabyte. The 7K1000 has a serial ATA interface, spins at 7200 revs per minute, and transfers data at 3 gigabits a second. The device will be targeted at two market segments, PCs and the home theatre, in devices such as digital video recorders, where the recording of high-definition TV calls for large storage capacity. Previously, the only way to reach the 1 terabyte mark in a desktop PC was by harnessing two 500 gigabyte drives or by combining smaller drives in a RAID array. Hitachi achieves this massive number by using the latest storage technology, perpendicular recording. Joseph Rao explains.
It allows us to increase the aerial density of the recording method and therefore store a lot more data on the same sort of drive structure as we have done in the past. It's that magical point that a lot of manufacturers have been striving for, and we're pleased that we're one of the first to deliver it to the Australian market today.
So what's perpendicular recording? Does anybody know? I thought they went round and round and they wrote, but yes.
I was going to say it sounds like polarisation. It sounds like they've got two heads at right angles to each other when they're recording the disc or something. You know? Don't know. I'm just making it up as I go along.
But a terabyte in your hard drives, a terabyte in your hard drive in your PC or in your Mac or anything like that, as you said, for high definition, because that's going to be the biggest thing. People really don't understand how much space high definition
takes
up.
What I like about it is if it's, they're going to go into the personal video recorders, that'll bring the price down even quicker because they'll be just putting them out there into the market. So for your personal PC, when you want to go and buy something, it'll actually bring the price will come down a lot quicker.
It's a massive, massive amount of data that you can store, isn't it, when you think about it? A thousand gigabytes.
But even if you bought yourself a nice RAID card, which is a card which lets you hook all your drives together and call them one drive letter, you could have 4 terabytes as one drive. That's a lot of data to lose too, by the way, in one fell swoop. That's a problem with these large drives, isn't it? If they fail,
that's a lot of data.
It's misery.
Yes.
Make sure you buy two, one to back it up and to copy it religiously, I'd say.
I think the largest hard disk that I've used in a system is about 340 gigs, something like that. Would that be about right?
340 gigs. They're up to 5 or 750s at the moment.
Yeah, I haven't used anything beyond about 300-ish, I don't think. But yeah. There you go.
That's email from some listeners here. What am I going to say? Graham sent us in an email saying primaries. So that's obviously a very short text. Now, I'm sure that's in relation to politics. We were talking about fundraising for the US.
Oh, the primaries. Yes. Okay. Yes, well done.
And Jeff Dudley has sent us one as well. Apparently, the Wind Media stream is working exceptionally well for you. There you go, Dr. Ron, because you look after the Wind Media stream. So thank you very much. Feedback@techtalkradio.com.au is where those emails are coming to. What have you heard of Snowflake chip assemblies? This is IBM's new development to make the microchips run 1/3 faster.
Swiss cheese computer chips.
Yeah, exactly. Or use 15% less power. So we're going green in processors because they're traditionally the power sucking, hungry devices within the.
And not just power, heat. Because they draw so much power, they also have to give off that heat some way. You know?
And then you need the noisy fan where the bearings go after about 3 or 4 or 5 months. So you end up with an exceptionally noisy machine. But IBM have developed this new way to make chips. The company said in a new process, allowing wiring on chips to be insulated with vacuum, replacing the glass-like substances used for decades, but which has become less effective as the chips steadily shrink. So it's going to sounds like your chip will implode.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
If you accidentally knock it or something like that, because obviously a vacuum is quite a good thermal resistive device.
They said it was the ultimate, didn't they? I think I read, you know. I read the article and still couldn't quite picture what they were trying to do. I understood what they were trying to get at, but I just didn't know how they were doing it.
So that's good. Good for IBM. They've developed that. So maybe we'll see another new... Because IBM aren't really known for their chips, are they? It's normally Intel and AMD are really the two major or the number one chip makers. So potentially IBM might jump the gun here and get a bit of a leg up.
What was your take on it, Dr. Ron? Did you read the Swiss cheese one with a whole lot of holes in it?
Swiss cheese chips. Yeah, 2009 they think they'll have the first ones in production, so it's still on the drawing board at the moment. It'll first be chips in IBM servers, they think, and later for processors for things like the PlayStation 3.
But it's a huge improvement, wasn't it?
Because you can't touch those things. They get so hot. Like, you burn your fingers touching a microprocessor if it's when it's been working for a bit, even for a short period of time. So,
and they announced a couple of other things earlier in the year too, hadn't they, about stacking them on top of each other so that shorter distances for the signal to travel, so it speeds it up. And another one they changed as well. I can't remember what it was, but insulation, they improved the insulation again earlier on the year.
All right. So hopefully we'll see some IBM chips come onto the market very shortly. Broadband, because we love talking about broadband. An article came out during the week talking about the requirements for broadband in the future in this country. Now, we've spoken to people when Adam was in here. We had a chat to him about where we should be going. Now, for those of you who have been living under a rock for the last couple of months, there's this big furor going on about what the federal government thinks is the speed, or what they consider to be calling broadband, which is 12 megabits per second, around about 10 times faster than your average. The fastest up until recently ADSL1 connection at around 1.5 megabits per second. But beyond next year, the year after and the year after that, what do you think would be a requirement for minimum broadband speeds? Well, can I say that one of the main lobby groups in the country, or the country's main information technology lobby, has said 30 gigabits per second is required by 2017. That's a long way from 12 megabits per second. So the question is, do you think with fibre to the node, which G9, which Telstra, which whoever, any incumbent wants to roll out, any non-incumbent wants to roll out, are they thinking that far down the track?
30 megabits per second is still very slow, and especially 2017.
This is 30 gigabits per second.
Gigabits. Oh, I thought you said meg, sorry. Gigabits, that's more like it. In 10 years' time, yeah, that'd be good. That'd be all
right. That's a 20,000-fold increase on the standard 1.5 megabit per second, which we've all been thinking was pretty fast up until recently.
That's what we're going to start to need if we're streaming video and doing things like that, coming straight in from the street.
Yeah, I don't know. 30 gigabits per second? I just can't think of what technology, what would use it. I mean, you'd have to have...
Oh, HD stream would definitely use it, compressed.
Yeah, I think you'd have to have multiple. Like, at home, you know, 30 gigabits per second. I mean, where they run television in, usually they get it between Melbourne and Sydney at... Well, they used to get it between Melbourne and Sydney on 34 megabits per second and a codec sort of thing. Now, that's not high definition, of course. That was analog converted sort of thing. So I can't see how they need that, you know, thousand-fold increase.
Well, the thing which is always a problem when it comes to compression is it's a lossy format. There's very few codecs, which is a little device which does the compression and re-expansion for you, that can do that sort of thing losslessly. There's a word for you, losslessly. Mm. So potentially this is going to open up the opportunities to stream uncompressed video, which in the television studios for standard definition is 260 megabits per second, and that's compressed 2:1. So, you know, theoretically you're up around 500, 600 megabits per second for an uncompressed stream. So it's getting there, and you multiply that by 4 for high definition. Maybe it's a possibility for all the audio video files that want their pure unadulterated pictures by 2007. Now, that's only 10 years away. We're in 2007 now. That's a big ask.
So if you think about it as that's the pipe coming into your house and you've got four televisions and over each person wants their own high-definition channel.
That's
and you've
exactly
got,
right, mate.
You might someone have on the computer and radio and, you know, a few other things.
You might be our kids are going to grow up and play with and take for granted that we never had.
You might be video conferencing, talking to someone or having a video conversation with them or something over the internet at the same time, and your wife's in the next room watching... high-def television.
And that's where I was thinking a bit inside the box. I was thinking of only one PC and that sort of thing, but it won't be like that in the future. It'll be just one pipe that does everything into your house.
Exactly. Yeah.
We're going to hope wireless catches up, really, don't we? Because wireless is struggling at 100 megabits per second, if that. So lots to evolve in that period of time. CBIT. Do you guys traverse the CBIT pathways at all? Have you been to Sydney and had a look?
I haven't been to Sydney. There was a person I used to work with who was lucky enough to go over to Germany, to the real CBIT, one year, a few years ago. Yeah, that would be a great trip to make one year.
Yeah, I've had the pleasure of going to NAB, which is the National Association of Broadcasters. I've been there a couple of years in Las Vegas. That's normally a bit of a turnout. It's more flavoured for broadcasting than it is for commercial and electronics. But CBIT is, or CBIT Australia.
Mm, we have a little Australian cut-down version here, don't we?
Yeah, it's... basically, Australasia's leading information and communications technology event for the business marketplace. I'm reading from their website here. And covers the entire spectrum of technology and the key elements that make up the ICT products and services in the marketplace. So really, it's all the new gadgets that are coming out. Really, really based at the consumer end, not so much the broadcasting or the manufacturer's end.
Or the distribution end, that's right.
So it really attracts a lot of nerds, if you want to call them that. And none better than our nerd up there in Sydney. please forgive me for calling him. He used that title himself when he was in the studio recently.
Indeed, that's right, yes.
Adam Turner took a trip to CBIT and reported from the studio or the conference floor.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
This week, we've taken the couch on the road with a visit to the CBIT Australia Technology Show at Darling Harbour in Sydney. I've set myself the goal of visiting all 700 exhibition booths, even if it's just a drive-by glance. So let's go and see who we can find.
My name's Julie and I'm here for the Project Factory. The Project Factory are doing work inside Second Life, which is a virtual online virtual world, bit of a phenomenon. Project Factory are working inside Second Life, building a brand presence for organisations. We've built 11 islands for Big Pond, an island for the ABC, and we're we're talking to everyone here at CBIT about how important Second Life is and the virtual world is really happening.
And what sort of things are you building?
Well, we're building islands, a billabong pub, so people can come and interact, community stuff. There's swimming pools. They're really just a chance for the community inside Second Life, the individuals who actually create Second Life, to come in and socialise and be together. But it's also then that opportunity for the organisation to have a bit of a brand presence there as well.
There are over 700 exhibitors this year at CBIT, and they're expecting at least 30,000 visitors to come through over 3 days and have a look around to see what's the latest in technology.
My name's Darryl Knight. I'm the National Sales Manager at Internode. And what do we do? Well, we're a broadband services provider. We deliver services for home, small office, home office organisations, business, right through to corporate. So we cover the entire spectrum.
And so from the people coming to the stand so far, what is it that they're interested in?
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of interest in our ADSL 2 Plus services and broadband services in general. And also a lot of interest here this year in VoIP. And voice over IP is no longer a buzzword, it's a reality. And Internode launched its second version of its voice over IP product last week. We call it NodePhone. And NodePhone is going to allow our customers to make and receive calls at a fraction of the price that they'd normally be paying for them.
G'day, my name's Brad. I'm the retail sales manager for Netgear. We manufacture consumer networking products that basically help people in the home share everything from their internet to digital content to connecting computers together and share all the devices around their home.
So of the people coming to the stand, what are they interested in?
So a couple of really hot products, a lot of interest in. We've got a range of new power line networking products that use your home's electrical wiring to replace cables or possibly wireless around the home. We've got some wireless Skype phones that can help you make free Skype calls all over the world. Some new storage solutions that you can share your content and automatically back up all your files. We've got a new range of wireless N networking products that you know greatly improve on the old 54G wireless standard, and they're probably the hottest products at the moment.
Just about all the major areas of technology you can think of are represented here. You've got sections for wireless, VoIP, GPS, open source. It's really a chance to just wander the floor and check out what's new and exciting in technology. Now we've wandered into OpenCBIT, which is the open source section of the show.
Hi there, my name's Donna Benjamin. I'm with OSIA, which is the Open Source Industry Association for businesses delivering open source solutions. But open source is about more than business. It's about basically bringing freedom to your computer. Even if you're running Windows, you can run open source. You could run OpenOffice, which is a full suite of applications like a word processor and a spreadsheet and a presentation package. There's drawing as well. Or even Firefox, which is a great web browser, allows you to do tab browsing, and it's really safe and secure.
So what sort of interest have you had from people?
Having amazing interest. People are picking up Ubuntu CDs. Now that's a live Linux CD. You can put that in your machine, boot off it, and experience Linux and open source software without having to install it on your computer. It's a really good way to get a first taste.
Okay, we're over talking to the people from the University of New South Wales BlueSat project.
Hi, my name is Garth. I'm the telemetry system team leader of the project. So basically what we're here is to tell the public what the university actually gave us a chance to do, is to build a microsatellite to be launched into space.
And what sort of things will the satellite do?
The satellite basically will join the ham amateur radio network.
So how will people on the ground be able to interact with it?
Well, if you're a regular hammer, we operate on two frequencies. There's an uplink frequency of 145 megahertz and a downlink frequency of 435 megahertz.
And what will you be able to do? Will you be able to talk to the satellite, or how will it work?
We're aiming to put a PackSat, which is a store and forward packet system, which operates similar to like a POP3 email account. So basically you can put your messages onto it, and when it passes over the location that needs to be downloaded, they can download off it again.
So it's basically like a voicemail box in space.
Yeah.
So there you go, whether you're trying to download videos from the internet or upload messages to a satellite, there's something for everyone at CBIT. And that's this week's View from the Couch.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback.
Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1300 664 882 and leave a voice message. That's 1300 664 882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to the show. Sorry, had a headphone problem then. I couldn't find them. Email just in from Adam Turner. He's a nerd and proud of it, apparently. So there you go.
Great report, Adam. That was terrific.
It was absolutely very good. Fantastic, Adam. And even from, I think we covered all spectrum there, really, didn't we? From wireless through to broadband, through to amateur, through
Second
to...
Second Life Islands and Ubuntu CDs, all sorts of things.
Yeah, you're an Ubuntu user.
I am.
Do you boot off a CD or do you boot off hard drive?
Boot off hard drive. I've loaded it up onto a dedicated machine.
Yeah.
And that's my primary machine at home now.
Is it? Ubuntu? Mm.
It is. I use it for email, web browsing, FTPing.
Do you just have chatting. It in for Microsoft? You just don't like paying for their products and services? Or?
That's part of it. Yeah. And it's also just very simple and it works very well, very reliable.
How many people do you think would be into Ubuntu? I know there's a good thread in the forum, I think, at the moment about Ubuntu, isn't
it? Yeah, there is. Yeah, more and more. And I think as more people start using it and find just how usable it actually is, how easy it is to load up, and how compatible it is with all the existing products, data formats, file formats, and things like that, more and more people will be using it.
Mm.
So if you want to use, you know, the programs that you can download at the moment, like your SpyBot and your AdAware and that sort of thing, does it just run on this?
You have to have a special installation set of those sorts of programs, Mark. They have to be written specifically to work on that flavor of Linux, which is called Debian. It's Debian Linux, and Ubuntu is a version of that. And if you've actually got that sort of a flavor available, then you can install it and run it. But most of the applications that I'm used to running on Windows, like Firefox, we've talked about the web browser, Thunderbird, the email client, iPodder, which is what I use for downloading podcasts, even things like Google Maps, for example, they've all got a special Debian installation. Instead of downloading the self-extracting file for Windows, for example, you download the Debian version and it just installs and runs.
There was always a lot of discussion about how Linux or Red Hat, or whichever flavor you're using, ran on older machines very well. Is that still the case?
It is. Absolutely, it is. Certainly, if you have a modern machine and you throw lots of memory at it and a nice fast processor, then it will run extremely fast and very reliably. I think I've said in the past I'm using... This is also a Celeron-flavored machine with a gigabyte of RAM, and it flies along. It's very usable.
So what do you reckon Microsoft make their OS so heavy? What is it in their OS that the... Red Hat, Linux people don't put in theirs? Or do they just do it better?
It's hard to say. The whole concept of Ubuntu is that it's an open source system. Which
Graham
means
would
that,
know if he's around.
Yeah, it means that anybody can
send access, us an email, Graham, you'll know.
Anybody can access the code, they can make changes or tinker with it if they want to. And once that's done and it's working well, then people like the Ubuntu people will package it up and distribute it as it is, yeah.
Okay. All right, let's talk about Telstra this week. Phil Burgess has been let out of his cage again. There's a bit of, toing and froing going on, so much so that Telstra are about to launch some advertising campaigns, which we haven't seen yet, in relation to, I guess, it's hard to say, spin is probably more the word these days, because it's all coming from all angles. The election's ramping up. Who to believe? Fibre to the node. There was even in the news tonight, Stuart Connor reported that $40 a month is what the fibre-to-the-mode access is going to start at. Telstra's been widely reported as wanting a wholesale price for its FTTN rollout of $80 to $90 a month, whereas rival G9 Consortium is talking $21 to $24. How they come up with $40, I don't know. But it's all vaporware at the moment as far as I'm concerned.
A wholesale price of $80 to $90. That's what the people are going to be paying before we actually get
on
our plan.
Then you've got to put your unbundled local loop on it, but then again, you probably don't, because they won't use that, will they? Because that's their edge, I guess, isn't it? And distributing fibre to the node means what? Fibre to a pole in your street, and then you get an HFE and maybe a high-frequency cable coming in from there, or...
No, then you get the twisted pair from
twisted
your...
Pair.
Twisted
pair. But it's short distance, so you can get high speeds on it.
Okay, so it'll be VDSL, probably.
That's what
they're
talking about.
I think you were saying
about
that in the news, wasn't it? From the pole or the little street
something or other. VDSL, very high bitrate DSL. It's the generation after the current ADSL 1 and ADSL 2 plus technologies.
Mm. So with the election coming up, Senator Coonan's sitting on the fence, to coin a cliche. She's taken in the submission from the G9. She's taken in the submission from Telstra. We, the humble punter, sitting here using ADSL and DSL products, are still none the wiser, and the decision is probably going to be made before the election, with a few flavours from the election sort of, you know, beat it up a bit, boys. So
that's what it's about, isn't it? That the advertising's about getting it to be an election issue and making decisions before the election.
That's right.
More than, the issue is obviously important as well, but let's highlight it now because we might get some action on it.
And we had Labor talking about raiding the Future Fund to build a broadband network. The current government, well, who knows? And, of course, we've got the two major telcos, or the players, the Telstra and the G9, both of which have websites which spin all sorts of truths and untruths. So it's all... I think the playing field...
G9 doesn't have a website.
Actually, you're right. It's the G11.
G11, is it? What they call it? And T4.
The T4
website. Oh, all these, G11. That's
all
right.
How do they work that out? That's really got me absolutely... Anyway, Phil Burgess had this to say this week.
I would describe the government's attitude to broadband as complacent. All kinds of energy and attention and time is spent on developing uranium mines, which will employ 500, 600, 800, 1,000 people, whatever it may be. All kinds of time is spent on building the support for nuclear power stations in this country that will maybe serve 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 people in 15 years. If there are government subsidies, Ziggy's report says we have to have government subsidies for the nuclear power stations, but we can't spend time on broadbanding the country. The government can't spend the time that's required to give us a green light to spend our own money, $4.1 billion, to broadband the country that will eventually affect 20 million people in this country. It just shows a misplaced priorities like I've never seen in my life before. This is the most important issue facing the future of this country, and the government is toying with the future prosperity of the country because they have ceded power, ceded decision-making to an unelected regulator.
That was Phil Burgess from Telstra talking on his next G handset. Sorry about that.
It did sound a bit watery.
It did. And it dropped out a few times there. But nonetheless, that's all spin, really. We've heard that before. It's been here. We're getting it from the other side of the fence as well, but they just seem to be
Absolutely.
Having a bit
and
of
And he was talking nothing about whether it was... which going with Telstra then, or he's just talking about the issue itself. And it's interesting because the pressure... He's trying to put pressure on the government, and there is pressure on the government because the Labor Party have come out and said what they're going to do.
So too right.
No, there's no issue there. They know, everyone knows it's out in the open there. It's all on the government and what they're going to do, and the election's coming up, and they just haven't made the decision. It's been like that for some time. So it's not whether it's Telstra or G9, it's what are you going to do in anyway, you know, full stop.
Straw poll in the studio, three of us sitting here tonight. Do you make decisions under pressure, or do you like to think about them a little bit?
Can I think about that and get back to you?
Exactly. That's the reason, isn't it? Because we do. You can't just race into something like this. We've spoken about it on the show before.
No,
you need to think about it. You need to future-proof it. And it has to be beyond any one organisation or individual.
That is very true. But how long? You know, how come the Labor Party's been able to come up with something and the government hasn't? That's the question.
I'm not going to go into personal opinions here. But, you know, whoever is advising the current government, whoever is, you know, sort of whispering in their ear, maybe they're not giving them the full facts.
Yeah, it's been a year, I reckon, we've been talking about this, and I think there's been enough time. I just don't know what's going on.
Well, the time is running out. We've got until early November, probably late October, the pundits are saying, federal election last week in October, and probably that's for the money. Phil Burgess went on to say this.
The advertising campaign is just one of many initiatives that we have already taken and will continue to take and expand to bring the message about this issue to the Australian people. It's our view that this is the most critical issue facing the future, and we're not going to just sit by on our hands while our proposals go into the party room and then disappear. This is a democracy, and everybody in this country deserves to be educated about the issues. They need to be educated about the issues, and then if they want the government and the regulator to sit back and leave things as they are, say it's okay for everybody to be left with 256 kilobits of broadband, while the rest of the world is going to 100 megabits, over 400 times faster than what we have here in Australia, then the people, if they decide that's what they want to do, they can do it. But this ought to be a decision by the people of this country, not by a few unelected bureaucrats in the ACCC. It's not against John Howard or anybody. This is not about who's right. This is about what's right. Look, Labor came out with a proposal, and there are many things about that proposal that give us heartburn. But at least the Labor people are talking about telecommunications in relation to jobs and growth and economic development and urban-rural equity and regional equity. Those are the kinds of things we ought to be talking about.
Who's right, not what's right. I think he nailed it. The other way around.
Yeah, that's better.
What's right, not who's right, I think is really what it's all about in that. And I'm glad to hear him say that. I've always been a bit, we all have our feelings towards Phil. That's probably one of the first grabs I've heard where he's actually put the boots down and actually given us something to think about. And I think he's very right.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Let's talk about the issue, not about G9 versus Telstra. It's not about that. It's let's get a plan out there for the country.
Exactly. So, good on you, Phil. Bouquet on that one, I would have thought. Also in the news that today, actually, the Australian IT Report's competition regulator, Graham Samuel, has called for Telstra to make public its proposal for a $4.1 billion high-speed broadband network being discussed behind closed doors with the federal government. So I'm reading between the lines there. I don't even think the ACCC know what's going on there. I'll stand corrected on that. But obviously they're doing the closed door deals. And this is where the other consortiums, the G11, the G9, whoever, getting their noses out of joint a little bit. But this is the corporate element coming through in a political environment.
Telstra has denied that. They've said they're not in any discussions whatsoever and there's no news on the horizon and go away, stop.
And they also
the scuttlebutt.
I think I read further down on that article that they said that the ACCC said, no, don't take it out into the open. We want private discussions earlier on. Right down the bottom of that article, I'm sure it said that. So it's like they're contradicting themselves, the ACCC, now with what they said earlier.
The difference between Telstra and the ACCC has nothing to do with public disclosure and everything to do with whether users in the cities should help to cover the substantial losses that arise from improvising. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. It was a bit further down than that, but basically...
That is about as far as it goes.
Okay, a bit further back than that.
Okay.
Telstra's competitors are rightly concerned, as we heard in the news, if they do introduce something along the lines of the new VDSL technology, it's going to completely obliterate all the other types of ADSL technology that is actually running in exchanges and on people's local loops. So people will have no option but to go with a VDSL plan if that's what Telstra decides to do in any agreement that it has with the federal government.
But nonetheless, whatever gets rolled out, it needs to be future-proofed and we need to be able to have headroom, for want of a technological term, so that it can expand and grow as the demand increases.
You're right. It does need to be future-proof, but look at it from the point of view of all the other ISPs and everybody who have spent millions and millions of dollars investing in a certain type of technology, which just with one quick decision with the government trying to do something in the heat of the moment, as we're saying with an election coming up, suddenly everything is just completely obliterated in terms of investment to date.
Indeed. Just an email in from Jeff Dudley on the screen. Like the sessionary Coonan. Are you good? See, there are people listening to us out there. You can vote and yes,
Jeff
get broadband happening, yeah. I think is very important.
Checks in the mail, Jeff.
Just wondering if you saw the full page ad in today's Age, which is a Melbourne newspaper, on page 6, which said Australia is a step closer to a competitive high-speed broadband network. No thanks to Telstra. Well, that's something controversial. No, I didn't see that. Any of you boys see that ad
no,
in the paper?
No, I didn't see that one.
All right, well, we'll go and have a look and we'll have a bit of a chat about it later. Apple is a green leader. This is Macintosh Apple.
Ah, yes.
Apparently, according to Steve Jobs, Apple chief executive Steve Jobs has fired back at environmentalists, saying his company is an industrial leader in removing toxic chemicals from its products and promoting recycling.
A lot of flack about this in recent times, about them doing the green thing.
Apple plans to completely eliminate the use of arsenic in its displays by the end of 2008. That may explain why some of them don't work. The company will eventually stop using mercury and will transition to LED backlighting whenever possible. Mr. Jobs wrote that up in a 5-page memo, which he published on the company's website. Mm. So you've heard a bit about this Apple ungreenness, have you, Dr. Ron?
In the last few months, it would seem, they've been in the press for all the wrong reasons in terms of their greenness and their environmental commitments that they have or haven't made in the past. So it's not surprising that Steve Jobs has come out with an announcement like this just of recent times.
What about other manufacturers? do other manufacturers cop flack to the level that poor old Apple are copping in this? Now, I'm not justifying Apple. I'm not a Mac user. But I do know colleagues that have been fairly severely disadvantaged in recent times because of lack of quality control, for want of a better term, on laptops. So do you reckon, I know, laptop we're sitting here, which is made by IBM. Wonder if they've got the same sort of dilemmas with their recycling and things like that, or is it just being singled out on Mac?
They may just, I mean, obviously they're a target because they're such a large, successful corporation, and they...
Is it what the materials they put into their laptops, or is it the process of making the laptops that uses arsenic and that sort of thing?
Well, that's the material I put in, is from what
I
understand.
Okay, so when it becomes landfill, effectively, it could be dangerous. So.
Exactly right.
Okay. Yeah, it's a big issue, isn't it, really, waste computer peripherals? I know that there's a lot of people that try and recycle it a little bit, but I don't know where it ends up. It must end up in landfill, does it?
Well, the huge thing is mobile phones.
Oh, yeah,
millions of mobile phones every year just get thrown into landfill.
Or lost.
Yeah, at least there's a program for that, the Mobile Muster, that you
there
can
is.
Drop your phone in at lots of different places.
Telstra shops
take them, don't they?
Yep.
Definitely.
It's good, good initiative, though.
A lot more than just Telstra shops that take them, and you can drop them in there.
I must admit, my old phones get given to my two-year-old plus, my five-year-old, and they just put them in the bath and the water, and they're great.
Yeah, and they do recycle them. They actually dispose of the batteries properly, and they remove the chemicals and recover the gold, because there's lots of gold in the contacts
and that sort of stuff. Yep, on circuit boards and things like that.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, Dr. Ron is going to tell us about something which is not on the rundown, which is what's going on with Dig.
Ooh.
Got a little tease there, Dr. Ron. What's going on? Now, this is probably one of the biggest IT stories for 2007, I reckon, but... What did you tell us?
I was absolutely gobsmacked when I saw this in the news, that one of the founders of arguably the most popular internet website today, Kevin Rose, has risked all his reputation and his company for the sake of going head-to-head with HD DVD. So we'll hear all about that after the break.
You're listening. Talk Radio. Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, visit the iTunes Music Store and search for Tech Talk Radio in the podcast section. Step two, click subscribe and you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
poor car visiting the relatives, child, washing the car. Pressing.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Other news this week too, which is I'll just touch on briefly. You remember that thing with Microsoft and Alcatel-Lucent about the MP3s and Fraunhofer?
Yes, about the...
That was the legal battle
that's
that
right.
took place recently. Well, a US federal judge has signed off on the US $1.5 billion jury verdict, that's American dollars, in favor of Alcatel-Lucent in a digital music patent dispute against Microsoft. US District Court Judge Mr. Brewster in San Diego ended his judgment last week, concluding that Microsoft Windows Media Player software infringed on patents owned by Lucent Technologies, the US telecommunications equipment maker acquired by Alcatel last year. So there you go. Poor old Microsoft. Sorry, bummer. You lose. And that's pretty expensive. But then again, $1.5 billion would be a flesh wound, I think, to that organisation, wouldn't it?
Just a flesh wound. So that means that at the moment when they distribute their media player, it can natively play MP3 format files.
Yep.
And what they've said is that that's a breach of the licensing for MP3.
Mm.
So do you think they'll take it out or just continue to pay royalties for it?
No, they've paid their $1.5 billion. I reckon they got every right to leave it in their media player now, don't you think?
Okay. It's built into all the software, so they've covered it for the latest.
Oh, maybe
it's out there now.
Maybe one of the patches that's going to come out on Patch Tuesday that Dr. Ron was speaking about earlier is going to remove MP3 players from the media player. Oh, that'd create a bit of a ruckus, I would imagine.
Do you want to install this software?
Well, that's what you have to do at the moment if you want to play DVDs in your PC. You have to install...
Oh, that's a pain in the bottom, isn't it?
It is, but this is the same sort of thing. And what Microsoft are doing is trying to do us all a favour and distribute all the compression licensing with the operating system, so I don't have to download extra stuff to make it work. But maybe they'll have to do this in the future. Maybe the $1.5 billion is it a fine, or is it just what they're owed civilly? Or
I think they worked that out by the number of PCs that had the number of operating system, multiply that by the number of years, and take away the number you first thought of.
And pat your head and rub your tummy.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, okay.
Now, there was I guess the point I'm making is there was some form of process involved in working that out.
So maybe based on what you're saying, they can leave it in, and they will leave it in with future operating systems. I hope that's the case, because it is very annoying, and it frustrates me incredibly, especially with media center type PCs and applications and things like that. You have to go away and download all this extra stuff, which you really think should be just part of the price and part of the bundle.
Now, tell me about Dig, speaking of all this sort of media Dig. Issues and stuff like that. What happened?
This is
website,
hot stuff.
Was published the algorithm to decrypt HD DVD.
Exactly right. Yeah? That's how it all started, Andrew. What happened last week was somebody worked out how to crack the digital rights management, which has been put on HD.
DRM.
That's right, DRM, which has been put on the HD DVD or high definition DVD
discs. Pretty scary, because we haven't had HD DVD very long, have we?
We haven't had it very long, Mark, no, but someone's worked it out. And they published this string of numbers and letters, a code, which means that if you know how to, you could potentially use this code in an application to make an HD DVD ripping program, or you could get around the digital rights management. Now, having said that, Dig, which is DIGG.com, is a community-based website, and it's a news, science and technology news type website where people actually post articles and they vote on what they think is most popular.
You can do that on our website.
You can. You can dig our website, for example, techtalkradio.com.au. You can click on a dig button and vote for us. What somebody did was they posted this code to Dig so that everybody could see what it was.
Ah, okay. So it wasn't sent privately via email to the organisation, that was put up on their website.
It was put up by a user.
Dig this button next to
it. That's right. And everyone started digging it. And it had hundreds and hundreds and thousands of digs. And it worked its way to the top. Because the way that Dig works is the more times you vote,
the more popular it is.
The more popular it is, the higher ranking it receives on the Dig page.
This is what they call an influential website. We categorised websites recently. This is an influential one.
It is. Exactly right. Now, what happened in the first instance was that the administrators of Dig received a cease and desist letter from the AACS. Now, the AACS...
Is that like the ACCC or something here?
Well, it's the licensing administrator for HD DVDs.
Ah, okay. The people who own the patent, I guess.
The people who own the patent. And they said, you can't do this. You're breaking the law. Take it off your website. And the Dig people, the Dig administrator said, oh, this looks a bit serious, a bit legal. Yeah, we better take it down. They took it down. What happened then was a revolt of monumental proportions. Tens of hundreds of thousands of people said, stop censoring us. We're going to post what we like on Dig, and we're going to vote for what we like on Dig. And they completely swamped the Dig website with submissions with this algorithm, with the code.
So the hundreds of, or possibly thousands of people had already downloaded it, were just posting it back up again.
Exactly right. That's exactly right, Mark. So then what happened is Dig sort of went with the theory, well, if you can't beat them, join them. And one of the founders or co-founders of Dig, Kevin Rose, who's a very popular internet personality, and he features on the Dig Nation video podcast as well. A lot of people will know who Kevin is or recognize his face. He put a little editorial at the top of the Dig website. He said, after seeing hundreds of stories and reading thousands of comments, you've made it quite clear you'd rather see Dig go down fighting than bow down to a bigger company. We hear you, and effective immediately, we won't delete stories or comments containing the code, and we'll deal with whatever the consequences might be. Now, this is a big call for Kevin Rose, because what he's done is remove the out that he might have had under the law in the United States, where if you're an ISP or if you run a website such as this, you can actually say, well, I'm not responsible.
I didn't know about it.
I'm not responsible for the content here.
It's bizarre, really, isn't it? ISPs, ignorance is an excuse, really, isn't it?
It is to an extent, but he's actually said, well, I'm aware of what I'm doing. I'm aware of what content is being put on Dig. I've made a conscious decision not to censor it, and I've made a conscious decision to ignore this cease and desist demand.
But this information would have been in the public domain initially for someone to post it, I would have thought.
Well, it was put in the public domain illegally.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
but it's like a newspaper quoting on a quote from someone else, like what we do. We quote, this person said this, you know. We're just reporting what was said, not the actual content of it.
Well, that's true. And then it's like...
grey air, isn't it? It very grey.
It's very, very grey.
Muddy water.
It is muddy water. So it's called the common... Sorry, the common carrier legal defence. And he's completely removed that now for himself. So it could spell the end of what is one of the most popular websites on the internet. It could spell the end of his career and his reputation. It's very sad.
Hopefully common sense will prevail here. This is all I'd have to say, is that, okay, if these things get cracked... Like, you look at when DVDs first came onto the market, you know, cracking those, it happened more or less instantly.
Mm.
And if anyone thinks it's not going to happen, well, then you've got to be kidding. And in this instance, you're shooting the messenger, aren't you? Like, someone else has decided to put this up there against, like, it's not Digg's problem, it's the messenger. Who put it there? But yet, well, Digg have now gone and supported the messenger.
Well, this is
they?
The thing. Digg have gone one step further, and they've said, we're now going to support the messenger, and we're now going to support...
They're supporting someone who's done something illegal.
Exactly right, mate. We're going to support the distribution of this code, which we've received legal advice that says, no, we're not allowed to do this, or we shouldn't be doing this. So
what do you think the upshot will be? What's going to happen next? Is it going to be pending legal advice? Or
I think so. It's back now, obviously, back in the court of the AACS, which is the...
Keep watching the Digg site, and so long as you don't get a 404, things are crazy, hey? Sorry, a 404 is now file not found error on a web server, I guess.
Exactly right, yeah. So what they were... AACS is the Advanced Access Content System. They're the licensing administrator for HD DVDs. They say that... The Digg website carrying the code is violating its intellectual property rights under the 1998 Digital Millennium Copyright Act. So we'll have to keep an eye on Digg and see what's happening there.
All right. Now, speaking of copyright laws needed an update for web. This is bringing it all back home. Australian laws must be drastically updated to protect consumer rights to access information on the internet. The Copyright Act covers personal media like iPods, but has limited provisions for the protection of legitimate copyright information on the internet. Which is probably fairly true, really. And I guess this information is news and satire and parody and all that sort of, as well as music and the likes as well. So this came up recently. So what do you think about cut and paste? Because this is where it comes from, isn't it? People will browse and read something and they'll say, oh, I need to post that, and they'll just cut and paste and... pop it into a Word document. Like, even universities, I'd hate to be a university professor these days, because of the internet, people would just cut and paste slabs of documents and put it into their thesis and say, here you go, it's written by me, and you go, hang on a second.
That's where you have to rely on endnotes and footnotes and providing the correct sources and references for what it is you're actually putting in.
Because I'm sure there's university people. I think there's even software out there that you can load your... I'll stand corrected. This is what I've heard. The lecturers can load their students' thesis into, and it checks on the internet for...
To see if it's
does a bit of a Google on it and says, hang on a minute, this is very similar to this.
To this article.
Yes. I'm sure someone can tell us. feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. So, copyright on law. And, of course, we've all had a bit of a copyright upheaval of recent times with the iPods. The Australian government have said, yeah, personal use, off you go. Do you copy much onto your MP3 player, Dr. Ron? Or
not
you're
music.
Really a pod,
no,
pod
I'm,
person?
No, I'm a pod person.
Yeah, I am too. I think that's the sign of the times, really, isn't it? Mark, do you...
I have a little bits I listen to on the odd occasion, but usually the podcasts are... the number one, the first thing to listen to.
Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about what Web 2 is. Dr. Ron, do you know what Web 2
is? Web 2.0.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. We've been talking about Digg. Digg's a good example of a Web 2.0 site.
Yeah, this is a new trendy vocabulary. Oh, is it Web 2 compliant? Is it Web 2 this?
Yeah.
Is it Web 2 that?
Yep.
Let me tell you, Web 2, I don't know whether it's all what it's cracked up to be, but you be the judge after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Web 2, Dr. Ron, we talked about it before we came in. Mark, do you know what Web 2 is?
Have
you
come across it? No, explain it to me. I know we've talked about it before.
It's one of these great new words that's come out. Like, it's like the second generation of what we can do online on the web.
A buzzword, isn't it? 2.0.
And it was a phrase that was first coined by O'Reilly Media in 2004, and it refers to the new generation of web-based services that encourage and increase online collaboration, communication and sharing among users.
What does all that mean?
Well, in essence, it's technology that lets you do it better, really. It's like you know, going to the next model of car, I guess, isn't it? The engine, you know, works better. It doesn't create so much carbon emissions and all that. It just does the same thing for a little bit, you know, more efficiently, I guess.
Well, the first generation of web was where you had static web pages and you went to a website and you clicked around and pulled your scroll bar down, had a look at some information and then moved on to another website. But with Web 2.0 type sites, it's really all about the concept of user interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to contribute to the content on the site. Like we were talking about Dig earlier. Another example is MySpace or Flickr, the photo sharing site, or the whole concept of blogging and having weblogs. It's a Web 2.0 phenomenon.
Exactly. A couple of other Web 2 sites, which are really, you know, what Web 2 is all about, is eBay.
Yeah, yep, definitely.
Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right, because you can interact and change the content.
That's right. Skype is a Web 2 site, as well as Delicious, which I think you just mentioned.
Yeah, I use Delicious.
And a site called Dodgeball, too, which also comes up there. I haven't been there, but that's what's on my list. But yeah, Flickr, you mentioned as well, is all in there as well. So Web 2 makes better use of the web's inherent functionality as a communication and collaboration tool. The first generation of websites functioned, as you said, Dr. Ron, basically the same way that traditional publishers functioned. In other words, the content on a website or web base was published by the site, and it was sort of like read, like a book.
It was pushed to
and
the
that's
users.
Web 1.
Mm.
So Web 2 just means it's a little bit more ergonomic.
More interactive.
A bit more interactive and uses the technology of today. In fact, Google are going to be talking all about that this month, the end of this month in Sydney. I'm actually going up there. I'll take the microphone with me. Who knows what we might get at the Google Developers Seminar, which is at a hotel somewhere in Sydney.
Tremendous.
Okay, and so we're really talking about interactive, so therefore we're talking about and the reasons why we need broadband, because everything's going Web 2.0.
Well, that's right, Mark. The stuff's going upstream now.
So the bandwidth required now is a lot greater.
You're sending photos upstream, you're sending mm-hmm. videos, you're communicating in real time. That's right, you need more bandwidth in each direction.
Yep.
So now you know what Web 2 is. So if someone comes up to you and says, oh, are you building Web 2 websites? You can go, of course. Lots of interactiveness and all that. And, of course, media is a big thing. And that was another interesting article I read recently too, which I think I spoke about last week, is that the advent of this video on demand and pulling down off web servers vast quantities of data in the form of pictures and sound is sort of going to make a – it's a bit like driving to the city in peak hour. You get congestion and things slow down and things break up a little bit. So,
TikTok Radio's web forum is a Web 2.0 concept. Because you interact, you log on, you connect, you can communicate, leave messages, you can do things like that. It's not just something which is static where we're throwing information at you. You're contributing and working out what's important and what's relevant.
Yes, indeed. Web 2.0. Talking about broadband, I guess, and connectivity and all that, Telstra released their WhizBang Next G network of recent times. Mark, what's news in the high-speed world of Next G?
They've released a few new handsets, which I thought I'd just go through a couple of little features on them. Give you a bit of an update.
Are we talking telephones or are we talking WhizBang, calculator things?
Bit of everything.
And
so,
let's
just look at the phones to begin with.
Yep.
There was one called a Telstra, I think it was called a Telstra 850, which was one of the first ones released. There was the manufacturer was ZTE. There was something in the news recently about them. I'm not sure if you covered it last week.
Oh, yeah, ZTE. They had a problem where Telstra handsets were sent back and no one could work out what the problem was.
Yeah, we've got one at work and haven't had any issues with it. But yeah,
what's the alleged complaint with them, do you know?
The fact that they switch off and go to sleep effectively. And
that's a feature I would have thought.
Does it mean it stops ringing?
Go to sleep and then calls go to message bank and things like that.
Like
now,
that.
I haven't seen it, so I don't know anyone who's got the interaction with it.
Need a phone with GPP for those people who know the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Genuine people personality. I think you need one that communicates like that.
Yes.
There's another one called a Telstra 851, which is sort of an upgraded version of it sort of thing, and a 252 also put out by ZTE. Notice that the 252 has vibration alert. The 851 doesn't. How many phones would you know these days that don't have vibrate alert?
I don't know, but I use mine all the time. You're in a meeting, you hit the hash button and you'll pop your phone into the pocket or in your top thing. And
surprising too that the 252 didn't have video messaging, not so much about that, but video calling. You know, you'd think they would just standard it on your next G network. I mean, this is straight off the Telstra website, I'm taking this information. So,
Do people use video much?
No,
I don't.
It's not a great deal.
It's not for me.
But if that's your selling point of your network, why would you have a phone that's not capable of doing it?
That's a very good point.
You know, and look, I'm taking off the Telstra website. I stand to be corrected, but you know, this is straight off the Telstra.com website.
I agree, Mark.
I'm into data. I want my email. I want my web browsing and all that. I want to be able to check things out. But video,
So just talking about the data cards for a minute. We've mentioned this before, but just to reiterate, there is data cards that do PCMCIA, which are the ones that originally came out. But now Telstra have released ones that do the, what's the card, the quarter PCI?
Oh, the one
Express,
I've got one sitting here. The Express PCM.
Express PCI, is it?
Yeah.
You just force the old cards into that slot. Yeah.
No,
we
don't
tried
do that.
It didn't work. And they've also
Do not jump on the card when it doesn't fit.
We also got there's also a USB version as well, sort of thing. So just so they've got three flavors of it to connect in. They've released two new, if you like, we've talked about the Jazz Jam on this show before.
Graham's got one.
I've got one now too.
I've got the predecessor. Sure. I've got a Jazz Jar.
Jazz Jar. Yep. Mm. Yep. So
do you use yours much?
Mm.
You just surf when you're at home in your local network. Is that what
that's
you
right?
Use it for?
I use it for communicating when I'm wandering around home.
Yep. So, Next G Network.
When you're
now
with wife 1.0, hey? Hi, lady.
Sorry, Mark.
I was just saying that there's also a couple of new things additional to the Jazz Jam that was released called there's a Samsung Blackjack, which you may have seen the ads on the TV.
That's a new ad on the telly.
Yep, that's right. So, that's.
What's the point of difference with that, do you know?
And the Palm Tree. Well, I think it's because it's made by Samsung, it's in competition to the BlackBerry. That's probably why it's got black in its name.
Okay, yep.
But. Interesting, it doesn't come out with infrared connectivity. You'd think maybe that would be standard.
Well, there's only so many things you can throw into a phone, I would have thought, and something has to go, I guess.
No voice dialing.
But infrared these days, who uses infrared?
No, not I.
It's been replaced by Bluetooth to a large extent.
It has a bit, yeah. But
well, maybe
still people have got it with the older phones and want to transfer stuff.
Maybe.
So, and I noticed too, between the three of them, because I was doing a comparison between the Palm Trio, which is one of their new ones, the Blackjack and the Jazz Jam, that the Jazz Jam, and I believe it is heavy, it's 176 grams compared to the Blackjack, which is only 105 grams, which is more like your normal phone sort of weight. So, and you do notice on your belt.
Just another straw poll, because these are good in the studio. What's your number one buying criteria for a mobile device?
For a mobile device.
If you just chose one feature that you must had to have in a mobile device, what would it be? Would it be lightweight? Would it be SMS capability? Would it be data capabilities?
I don't know. I don't think there is any one criteria that I'd look at. I'd look at the combination, I think.
Yeah, it's like that.
Yeah.
But you got to. I was thinking about this the other day. The reason the mobile phone was really for voice. You can't buy a phone these days which does what the traditional phone does. It's all got MP3 players. It's got data. It's got email. It's got absolutely everything, except some of them don't have infrared jacks now, apparently. But like, it's the way it is. You know, especially for some people who are not savvy, and I'd say that I'd call us tech savvy. But those people that, you know, later on in life, and they say, I just need a phone for safety. And they get flummoxed when they go into these shops. And
True. No, you can still buy those phones. And they've got the LCD screen, the black and white one, you know. They're still available and they're cheap. And they're the ones you get on the $0 up front and that sort of thing. But personally, I look at the ones that have got the MP3 built in. Because I don't want to be carrying a separate MP3 player and a separate phone and that sort of thing. I like it all built in as well on camera.
So any other great innovations?
Yeah, Telstra on their website have got some interesting information regarding when you purchase an XG handset, what are you going to use it for? If you're going to be using in regional areas.
That's what we're just talking about, yep.
Yep. More to do with, you know, are you going to use in the city or regional areas and, you know, major highways or remote locations, you should get an external antenna for it. So buy a phone that's capable of either having a hands-free kit or using a patch cable, things like that.
My network card that sits over here has got a provision for an external antenna.
That's right. And you can buy a patch cable that goes onto it to extend it. Now, that's important for data users. Well, if we talk about voice, it's just to have coverage where, you know, you maybe not have coverage when you're using it handheld. And that's what they're finding at the moment is the old CMA phones had a pull-out antenna.
Yes.
And actually, the network coverage is the same because that's what they said it will be. In areas where people are complaining, they've worked out that the people are using the new handsets don't have the pull-out antennas and actually are suffering because they've got their hand around where the antenna sits in the,
and
in the handset.
That would attenuate the
signal,
which means
they weren't doing before. So you could actually do a proper engineering type measurement, and they're equal. But when you actually go to use it, people are saying that's not equal. Well,
it's like when you put your hand on the car radio antenna and you lose the radio station, really, isn't it?
Yeah,
so it's the same
right.
thing applies
that's
with your mobile device.
So they've put out a bit of an explanation about shielding. You know, if you want to put an antenna on your car, it should be on the roof, not inside, or not on the bonnet. It's better to be on the roof.
I've always been a firm believer of getting a mobile device which has an external antenna so you can do just that.
Absolutely. And even for data speeds, if you've got low data speeds because you're in a fringe area or indoors, it's better to have a little patch antenna, because those little antennas that are right next to the PC, they're actually better if you run a little cable and have a little antenna off the maybe off the screen part and make it a bit higher and a bit further away.
Sticky
from
tape
the noisy
it to the window in
it.
The office or the house or something like
that's
that.
That's right. I know people who just Velcro, have a Velcro bit and they Velcro it onto the top of the laptop screen, and that allows it to get away from the processor, which is a really noisy device, and gives it less sensitivity. So there you go. So lots of interesting stuff, and that's on the Telstra mobile part of the Telstra.com website.
Very good. All right. If you have any questions, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is the address to send them.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1300 664 882 and leave a voice message. That's 1300 664 882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
The Tech Talk Radio Gadget of the Week this week is one which I've found rather, I guess, something you need if you have young children around the house, especially, well, not so much young, but older ones. JCAR is an organisation which actually has, I guess you say, a catalogue of all sorts of gadgets that come out from time to time. And I stumbled across this one, which I just couldn't resist. It's called a sonic grenade.
Oh, dear.
Now, this is, for an investment of around about $20, you can buy one of these devices, which runs on 3 pen light batteries. Now, they promote it as probably the most annoying device in the world, which it potentially could be, because basically, you pull the pin, lob it in somewhere, and it makes the most unbelievably excruciating agony type sort of high-pitched noise or noises thereof. So if you've got young kids in the house that just won't get out of bed, or you need to annoy someone in the office, and you're prepared to risk $20, because I know if someone did that to me, I'd probably smash the thing to pieces.
Throw it at the window.
But it's probably worth a bit of a visit. So for
sonic grenade.
For $20, go down and have a look at JCAR for a sonic grenade, and I think your kids and your office colleagues will probably love you forever.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
Today's Website of the Week is from Jeff Dudley, our listener.
One of our regulars.
Hi,
Jeff.
One of our regular listeners. Yeah, g'day, GD.
Send him in. This is good. Thanks, GD.
He's got it from his work colleague, Ben, and he said you'll really love this, and we do. It's http://www.gethuman.com.au.
Get human.
This is like get a real life, get a first life
get
that
a
you
first
had last
life.
Week. Yeah.
That's right. This is a great little website that tells you the names of companies, the phone number to ring, and the secret code you use to get straight through to a human, so you can avoid the IVR.
That's just what the doctor ordered, really, isn't it? So if you don't want to speak to that goddamn hello, please select one for this, two for that.
Yep.
So give us an example, Mark.
Okay, so if you wanted Aussie Home Loans, you would dial a phone number and then you'd press 0000 and you'll get to a human.
Oh, so when the system answers at the other end...
Be sure your call's connected before you press that number, because otherwise you'll speak to, what service would you like, please?
You'll have the fire brigade there. Yeah, so you press 0000 and then you get connected to a human operator.
Yep, or if you want IOOF, you press 0, wait 5 seconds, then press hash. Or even this one here, St. George Bank. Just say everyday banking and you'll go straight through.
Everyday banking.
Yep. National Australia Bank. Hash,
Albert
hash, hash.
Davies.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, three for free. Oh,
and
sorry,
it's got all the sites on there and an easy way to get through. Most of them are zeros and then combinations of zeros or hashes, but
So the website again, all the W's where?
.gethuman.com.au.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Showtime. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
A woman's email to Telecom New Zealand's help desk has been rejected because the company's filter system found her name gay, inappropriate for business-like communication. The cyberspace saga began when web designer Gay Hamilton emailed Telecom's help desk inquiring if extra broadband services were available in her Nelson suburb in New Zealand. The automated reply was not what she was expecting. Your email was identified by our content filtering processes as containing language that may be considered inappropriate for business-like communication. The offensive word was the woman's name. And the content that caused this to happen was the word gay 8 times at 2 points each for an expression score of 16 points. Gay Hamilton, who is herself gay, was apologised to by Telecom New Zealand, but when approached for a comment by New Zealand Herald, Telecom New Zealand refused to supply a list of words which its email servers searched for. That is this week's Odd Spot.
That's very funny, really, isn't it? Just goes to show how you can use technology for the wrong things, really, isn't it?
Poor lady.
Maybe there should be some other companies in this country that could use their equivalent for their spam filter or something like that. That'd be very funny. All right. You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio for another week. We'll be back next week with more of the same, jocularity and all that sort of thing.
Jocularity.
Are you coming again, Ron? This is Doctor. You've been here for some time now. And
it's habit forming. I'll have to take a bit of a dive, I think, yeah, throughout the rest of May. Yeah.
Very good. All right. Thank you, Mark. Been insightful again as per normal. So we'll see you all again same time next week when Tech Talk Radio returns to the place you're listening to right now.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Sir Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.